Welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by Marco Arment from Under the Radar, Top 4, and it's a non-relay show, but we'll give it a shout-out, ATP, and Jason Snell, and I had to write these down. Please correct me if I've missed any.
Yeah.
Upgrade, Download,
yes.
Liftoff,
yeah, we do
and
that together.
Free Agents. All four. And this month we're going to talk about the iMac Pro. It's going to be fun. So the three of us are all talking to each other through our new Space Gray iMac Pros. And so I thought it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about the computer itself, maybe why we thought it was for us. And I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to explore around sort of what's next, you know, what is the next chapter of Apple's like revised Mac, you know, pro user story. So Jason, I'll start with you. Why does the iMac Pro exist? How did this machine come into being, you think?
Well, based on all of the information we have from people who have sources and things like that, it seems like this was Apple's way of getting out of the Mac Pro business. And then at some point along the way, they decided that the uproar was so great that they were going to also make a Mac Pro, which leaves us in this weird position where the product that they conceived of as being the replacement for the Mac Pro is now additive. But I think it's a good idea. I mean, I get why not everybody who wants a Mac Pro would want an iMac Pro, but there are a lot of people who used to classify themselves as, you know, high-end Mac users who over the last decade have migrated to the iMac, which I will remind you, Stephen, you probably don't need to know this because you used to have a whole bunch of those original iMacs, but the iMac was considered a toy computer by serious yeah. Mac users. Serious Mac users use Power Macs, right? Power Mac G3, G4, G5, and then the Mac Pro when the Intel switch happened. But as that Intel switch happened, the Mac Pro started to really kind of like go way up in terms of expense and power, and the iMac kept getting more powerful. And in the last decade, a lot of us, like I always bought Power Macs, and I've used an iMac for the better part of the last decade in terms of my desktop computer. So, Apple saying, what if we could create something that was more like a Mac Pro, but was also tacked onto the high end, you know, of the iMac market? It seems like it kind of makes sense. It's not for everybody, but so many of the users who want to push the Mac to its limits were already ending up with iMacs anyway, like the three of us, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I can see why they went that way.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The iMac started life as a consumer product. And like you said, sort of a toy consumer product. And I mean, if you look now at the 2017 iMac, all the way from the 21.5, like the base model, all the way to the i7 5K, the span is sort of breathtaking. I think out of all of Apple's computers, the iMac line has the biggest breadth. You know, the low-end MacBook Pro and the high-end MacBook Pro, they're different from each other, but they're not, I think, so different as the base and the high-end iMac.
This is one of the reasons it's so amusing that AppleCare is priced by computer family and not price. And therefore, there's literally a 10 times difference between the cheapest and most expensive iMac. But AppleCare is $169, whether you spent $1,300 or $13,000 on it.
That $169 is a great deal for the iMac Pro.
It's the first time I've ever bought AppleCare Plus. Ever, because it was too great a deal to pass up for this $5,000 computer I have in front of me.
So, Marco, you were one of those users that Jason was talking about. I know you had, I think, a series of Mac Pro towers over the years, and then you switched to a 5K iMac a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I had, I started out as many people do. I started out in my Mac usage in a laptop, in a PowerBook G4, and it was wonderful, loved it. But I always really wanted a desktop. I pushed things hard, and I wanted like the fastest disks, the most storage, the most processor power. Like I always wanted the most because I actually do, you know, use things pretty hard in a lot of my day to day use and a lot of my work and a lot of my hobby stuff too. So, you know, I always wanted the desktop, and originally I couldn't afford one. Then I finally could, and, you know, had a series. I started out with a 2008 Mac Pro, which John Siracusa is still using. but I started out with that, and, you know, eventually got a 2010 one. I got a 2012 one after that, which was basically a 2010. And then when the 2013 trash can came out in early 2014, I got one of those. And then in late 2014, Retina happened on the desktop with the iMac 5K, and no one really expected that at the time. It was, I think, a couple years earlier than most people would have guessed it would have happened. And there was no good way to get Retina at that size, you know, at the 27 or 30-inch size in the Mac Pro trash can tower. And so I decided Retina was more important to me, and I jumped ship. And I left the Mac Pro thinking, I can return to the Mac Pro in a year or two when they update it. And, well, nothing happened. So, yeah, now, you know, as I'm using the iMac Pro, and as, you know, as more comes out about the internals of it and everything and the performance of it, I think Apple kind of lowballed expectations here with that famous meeting last spring where they said, okay, don't worry, we're working on a new Mac Pro and a new display. And also later this year, we're going to have some pro configurations of the iMac. That sounded to me like we talked about on ATP when that, like when they said all that, I remember saying, like, what could the pro configurations of the iMac be? What does that mean? And I think that they were really downplaying what this is. What they have done with the iMac Pro is they have released a new Mac Pro. It happens to be an iMac case with a screen attached to the front. But this is, by all measures, a Mac Pro. You know, the main area that it is lacking is in upgradability and certain selection of parts. But it was lacking in those same areas, really, for all intents and purposes, in the 2013 Mac Pro also. So they could have just released this as the new Mac Pro and said, all right, this is it. This is the new Mac Pro. Now you have to have a screen with it, but oh well. Like, that wouldn't have been the end of the world. And so for them to not only have done this, they have literally basically just given us a new Mac Pro, and also they're saying, we're also going to give you an option for something else sometime down the road that will be more modular and upgradable. That's awesome. This is like, you know, they swung from, like, you know, the worst to the best here. You know, we're like, literally 1 year ago, it sounded like we were never going to get another really good, like, Mac Pro style desktop computer again. And I mean that not just like as a tower, but I mean that like in things like component selection and just sheer power, you know, using workstation parts instead of consumer parts, stuff like that. It really did look a year ago like the era of pro grade Mac hardware was just over, that they would never make any more. And then they had that famous meeting in the spring, and then now, and then we saw the iMac Pro at WWDC in June, and then in December here we can buy them. And now they have totally turned around the public knowledge and perception and narrative of their pro efforts. You know, before it was, they don't care about pros at all, and they're killing this market completely and neglecting it completely. Now the iMac Pro comes out, it's pretty great. It has a lot of engineering effort in it that, like, they didn't just put a new processor in an iMac. Like, they significantly redesigned the internals and the structures of this to make this work. So this wasn't like a quick hack job. They didn't phone it in. Like, this is the real deal. So now we have, like, an embarrassment of riches now for the pros. Like, oh, we have this amazing Mac Pro, and also there's more coming down the road.
Yeah, I think that's what's so interesting about all this. You know, depending on sort of how you read that April meeting, This machine was already in the works. They decided to add a Mac Pro into the mix later on. And so, yeah, I mean, really, for the first time that I can really think of, someone who needs, like, the most Mac that they can buy, they're going to have more than just one option. Like, before, if you were that user and you didn't want a tower, like, kind of too bad, you're stuck with a tower because the iMac wasn't in the same league. But now, you know, and it makes me wonder where, like, what room is left for the Mac Pro? Like, one thing I at least would like to see, I'm not going to bet money on it, but it used to be during, like, the cheese grater days, you could get an entry Mac Pro for, like, $2,500, $2,700 and kind of upgrade it as you went. And I would love, I think one thing Apple could do with a Mac Pro is have an entry model that is, you know, substantially cheaper than the iMac Pro to let more people in. And, you know, you're still gonna have to buy a display, so, you know, add $1,000 to it. But I think there's room for a Mac Pro to sit, you know, kind of straddle the iMac Pro on either side, and have a Mac Pro that's insane, but if someone needs a little bit less or is going to upgrade it down the road, I think the Mac Pro platform just gives them flexibility that maybe the iMac Pro doesn't have. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for a lot of the roles of the Mac Pro, like one of the ways the 2013 Trashcan one fell down is that it defined what a high-end desktop is as one Xeon processor, two professional level GPUs, and, you know, only this one stick of SSD storage. Like, mm-hmm. that was it. And if what you wanted was not that combination or those proportions, like, I don't ever really get enterprise grade GPUs or whatever these are. Back when I was buying Mac Pro towers, you'd have the entry level GPU, which was terrible. Then for $200 or so more, you could get like what was basically a decent gaming GPU for the time. And then for $2,000 more, you could get like the pro grade GPU for like high end GL applications and like CAD rendering and stuff like that. That's what these enterprise grade or these pro grade GPUs in the 2013 and now the iMac Pro, that's kind of what these are for. I don't need that. And so I just kept getting, you know, just like either the entry or the gamer upgrade GPU for a small amount of money. I certainly didn't need two of them when the 2013 came out. And so they've kind of walked it back a little bit by making the iMac Pro a little more configurable, but it's still one Xeon, now it's just one GPU, and, you know, a certain, you know, small number of RAM options, small number of processor options, and you know, small number of storage options. But by having it be a tower, you have many more possibilities for the way people can configure that. Because one thing that I think in the discussion of all of Apple's pro hardware changes over the last few years, this starts big time with the laptops, but also moves into, you know, the design failure of the 2013 Mac Pro. I think it's very clear that there is no one good definition of what is a pro user. And that what pro buyers need, if you can even define what this group of people, but like what they need varies depending on what they do. So really what pros need is options and versatility and flexibility in their offerings. And whenever Apple has, you know, has had problems with what they're offering in the pro line, it seems like those problems usually come from a lack of options, a lack of versatility, and a lack of flexibility.
Yeah,
and so a tower really can boost that by giving you way more options on how you configure those parts, what parts you buy, what you don't buy. Like, I don't really use GPUs for much, but I use tons of CPU power. So if there's an option that gives me two CPU sockets and just one like mid-grade GPU, mm-hmm. I would take that option, you know, and other people might want different combinations. And so like the best thing they can do for the Mac Pro is offer the kind of options and upgradability that the iMac inherently doesn't offer.
Yeah, the GPU on the iMac Pro, what I want to say is that it's totally unnecessary for me. Although that's not entirely true, because Xeon processors don't include the media encode block, which means that unlike the consumer processors that Intel makes, they don't have enhanced hardware encoding of video, for example. And so on the iMac Pro, the GPU does that because the GPU has a media block that does that. So I guess I do need the GPU, but the GPU is overkill. I'm not doing heavy graphics stuff. I'm doing multi-core. I would trade GPU power for more cores probably. But you know, they're creating a base level with the iMac Pro of sort of like, look, it's a pro machine. It's got a little bit of everything. And Apple struggles with defining what this pro market is, because exactly as you said, Marco, it is a bunch of little markets that assemble into a pro market, but it's not a market. It's like a whole selection of markets. And even I'm looking at the iMac Pro reviewer's guide that Apple sends out to people who write product reviews of these products. And in their performance section, they've got Final Cut and Logic. They've got Advent Twin Motion, which is 3D and VR visualization. They've got Maxon Cinema 4D. They've got Maya. They've got Adobe Creative Cloud with Photoshop and Dimension. They've got Blackmagic Resolve Studio. They've got Blackmagic Fusion Studio. They've got Xcode. So there's the Marco test.
Hey.
They've got Osirix or Osirix, which is medical imaging viewing. They've got Mathematica, Pixelmator. Those are all of their sample performance with actual charts that they've done with their internal. They've got a, for people who don't know, a performance marketing group. All of their claims of how much faster their systems are comes from testing they do internally using their performance marketing group. And I think a bunch of those people used to work in the Macworld lab, to be honest, that they work at Apple now doing stuff like this. So they had to come up with tests that show how awesome the iMac Pro is. And they ended up having, and this is unusual, having like 10 or 12 different applications because there is no one market for this. Like for me, it's all about Logic with a little bit of Final Cut and things that Marco writes because Marco wants to make sure that all the cores get filled. And that's great. But for somebody else, it's going to be like, I don't care at all about that. I only care about Lightroom or Photoshop or my 3D application, like, you know, Maya or something like that. Because again, this is the difficulty, which is why, to Marco's point, flexibility is necessary with something like the Mac Pro, because you probably want to be able to steer it in a particular direction for whatever application you're going to use for that system.
It also, I think, you know, I believe all of us have spoken and written about this factor before. You know, Apple makes such opinionated design decisions for most of their product line, and many of them are very limiting decisions for certain needs. And so to have something, some kind of catch-all product that, like, if your needs don't fit in an iMac or a MacBook Pro or whatever else, there's something you can buy, that, even if it's maybe a lot more money than you wanted to spend, or it's not quite what you want, but it's close. Like, there's something you can buy in the lineup that will satisfy those needs. And at the low end, that's supposed to be the Mac Mini. We have, you know, separate discussion. At the high end, that's the Mac Pro. And the more limited you make those products or the more you neglect them, the harder it is for people whose needs get pushed out of the mainstream products to stick with the Mac platform at all. So it's very important that those products remain healthy and maintained and as versatile as possible, because otherwise, you know, if for instance, like if the iMac Pro was it, that's great. But what if you actually did need dual GPUs for your workload? Then maybe you could do external, but they aren't as good. And it's like, you know, you're probably just building a PC at that point. There's nothing for you. Whereas once the Mac Pro comes out, assuming it probably will support dual GPUs, that need becomes covered.
The Mac Mini brings up an interesting point of products basically just sitting, right? The 2013 Mac Pro did that. We finally got an explanation as to why, that it was just ill-designed. How big of a deal is an upgrade cycle going to be on the iMac Pro? I know that the Xeons that Apple is using, this class of processor, they're not updated on the sort of same timetable as something like the Core i5s and i7s we see elsewhere in the line. But how often should Apple be turning this thing over for the three of us to feel comfortable?
I mean, it's a question with every iMac too, right? Which is, you've just got a widget that contains the things, and then if you want new things, they basically have to make a new widget. And so I don't know enough. I mean, Marco, you probably know better about like how often a new chip family comes out from Intel. But that's sort of what I'm feeling, is like what I would like to see Apple do across the Mac line is just pace Intel when it comes to processor updates. Like, you know, it used to be Intel would release a processor update, and within 6 months, Apple would release a speed bump to configurations that use the new processor, and just kind of kept, it wasn't getting ahead, but it wasn't getting way behind. It was just kind of in the flow of it. And the problem, I think people get cranky when Intel releases a whole new family of processors, and then a year plus passes, and Apple is still not adopting them. So for this, you know, and again, you could, if you're a single single owner of an iMac like we are, you could sell your iMac and get a new, or your iMac Pro and get a new iMac Pro or get a Mac Pro or whatever. But in larger organizations, what ends up happening is they buy 10, and then the next year the new ones come out and they roll those 10 down and buy 10 more, and then they kind of cycle through. But what they don't want to do is buy a computer that hasn't been updated in 3 years, like the Mac Pro right now. So, I mean, for me, that's the baseline for me, is sort of being in sync with Intel. Doesn't have to be exact, but like, be in the ballpark. Don't sell a new computer that's using the processor that Intel replaced 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, and as you said, like, Apple used to be pretty close with that. Like, they, through across all the Macs, like laptops, everything, like they used to be pretty good at following the Intel schedule within a few months. Oftentimes, Macs were the first computers that you could get the newest Intel chips in. Like, sometimes they would strike good deals with Intel where the Mac Pro was the only computer that you could get that Xeon in really in any kind of volume for like the first few months it was out. Like, and you know, sometimes they do the same thing with laptops and everything. So it's not that we know Apple can do this. They have done it before. And so they sort of still do with some of their lines, like, you know, there's exceptions here and there. But for instance, usually the iMac is really on top of it. Like, usually the iMac is updated as soon as there's a new chip for it to use in reasonable volume. And there's complicating factors. You know, sometimes Intel will, quote, release a chip, but it's not actually available in enough volume for Apple or anybody to really sell, you know, a lot of them in their computers. So it's not really out in a useful way yet. And, you know, it's hard to know sometimes whether that's the case or not. But usually Apple used to be pretty good at following these things. So that's what I would expect for the iMac Pro, is for most generations of processors that they can use for this, they should issue an update that includes them within 6 months of the processor becoming available. Now, the other thing to consider is, you know, as you mentioned, Stephen, like the Xeons are only really updated about every year and a half to 2 years, usually. So there's only going to be a relevant CPU update about every 2 years, probably. The big question here is, are we still waiting for just CPU updates? Or in a Pro computer in 2018, I think the GPU should also be a significant driving factor of those upgrades. So I think every time there is a new generation of GPUs that are appropriate for this, they should basically issue an update of, like, you know, whichever happens first, new CPU or new GPU, even if it means that, like, the CPU might have to, or you might have like two generations in a row that use the same CPU, but they just have different GPUs. And I think that's okay, as long as they are continuing to approximately keep pace with the kind of parts that are available. I think they're doing their job. What we don't want to see is entire generations going by that they don't use, and that, you know, as Jason said, that then we're just like sitting around here having to buy 3-year-old computers if we need one.
Yeah, that would be that'd be a real bummer.
Yeah.
So we've all had these machines now. I think Jason said his the longest, maybe, you know, a couple of weeks.
Boxing Day, I got mine. Day after Christmas, I got one more present.
Unboxing Day, really. So how have they treated y'all? I know for me, and I wrote a thing on iMore about it. It'll be in the show notes, where I tried the i7 2017 iMac, because I was going to do this on a budget, and end up not being the machine for me. And so I did the base model iMac Pro, and in the couple weeks I've had it, it has really impressed me how hard I can push it, and it just, there, it seems, even the base model seems like there's no end in sight. Like, it can take everything I throw at it, and does it all quietly, and it keeps its calm about it, and I've just been super impressed with it. What about you, Jason?
It makes me angrier than I already was at the stuff that I use that isn't properly multi-threaded. Like, I love the D-Reverb plugin in Isotope RX6,
oh, yeah,
which removes echo from people's tracks, and that's single-threaded. So it takes exactly to the second as long as it did. I tested it on my original 5K iMac. Exactly the same amount of time. There's no benefit. It's literally the same speed, which means the single processor, like, Geekbench score is higher on a modern iMac than on the iMac Pro, because it can, that one core can run faster. You're trading some of that for multi-core. But on the multi-core stuff and on the storage front, because, you know, that first generation 5K iMac was also a lot slower. I think the second generation 5K iMac was twice as much SSD bandwidth.
Yeah, something
and
like that.
And so, yeah, so that makes a big difference too. So it's been great. The heavy lifting stuff that I do is kind of, it's laughable now how fast some of that stuff works. And it's not just the speed at which it does it, but it's the headroom, which also I've noticed. And I think that has to do with the power of the system as well as the amount of RAM and the speed of the storage all working together. Like, I used to do serially denoising tracks. I would remove, you know, background noise from like 5 podcast tracks at once for one of these podcasts I do with 6 people on them. And this system, I can throw 3, 4, 5 of those things into Isotope simultaneously and get them all going, and the denoise fills the cores, and that takes time. But what ends up happening is one of them finishes and I can be saving it while the other ones are still going, and it all just kind of works. Whereas on my 5K iMac, I think because of RAM, it started bogging down, and certainly because of the storage as well. So I've noticed that too, that I'm actually able to do more in an even more compressed amount of time because of that. So I've really enjoyed that. I finally got boot camp running, although it actually took a few tries because it was failing, but then it started working again. I at some point installed the 10.13.3 beta, which I had gotten a heads up from Apple that it ships with 10.13.2, but it's a new system. It's iMac Pro 1.1. And I get the impression that there's some stuff in 10.13.3 that is addressing quirks of the iMac Pro. So I've been a little more aggressive in updating to betas as well, because I think that they're fixing bugs that are iMac Pro bugs right now. So, but since I've done that, I've again, I don't know if I'm hallucinating or not, but it seemed even more kind of smooth now that I'm on 10.13.3.
Yeah, I've had only positive things to say about mine also. It is even better than I thought it would be, and it's even better than I hoped it would be. For me, the biggest, I knew from all the reviews and tests and just knowing that it's a Xeon and stuff in there, I knew it would be faster than what I had. That's great. That's step one. But I was also thinking, like, I'm really going to want the Mac Pro when it comes out instead of this, because I want it to be able to be to have all the CPU power I need, and also for it to stay quiet under load. And I didn't think the iMac would do that, because the regular iMac does not do that. Very much so does not do that. The regular iMac is really quiet as long as you're not pushing it hard. But as soon as you push the CPU much, you're going to hear that fan spin up. And with the iMac Pro, I have pushed the CPU a lot. I've been using it full time for a little over a week. I have really pushed it hard in a number of ways, a number of different ways, and I have yet to hear the fan. Like, it's amazing. And so for me, this is like it's already doing everything I want from a Mac Pro for my purposes. And so I actually might not need the Mac Pro.
I assume the fan cranks up if you're on an 18 core system and you're blasting the GPU and all the cores are full or something, but I have yet, and I have really stressed mine out too. And granted, the base model especially, like, that's the least heat that any configuration is going to throw into the system, right?
Asterisk, but, though, there's the whole TDP thing. Like, all the chips are rated at 140 watt TDP.
Oh, right. So they may just throttle it down. Well, the point is, though, I've done everything, and all it does is make the air that blows out the back warmer, but there's no revving fan. And that's the thing, is it's the revving fan. I mentioned this on Upgrade earlier this week, that that I mentioned, the fan's running all the time, and somebody pointed out, well, most Macs, the fan is running all the time. And it's like, okay, fair enough, but that's not the way you think of it. The way you think of it is you hear the fan rev up. And that just doesn't happen on this system. Maybe it does at some point theoretically, but it just doesn't happen. I start a video. It used to be I'd start a video in code, and I knew that within like 20 seconds, I'd have this white noise blowing in my office, and it doesn't happen.
And you mentioned earlier, like, that we're going to have two options. We're going to have, for people's needs, the iMac Pro and the Mac Pro. I would argue we will have three options, because the regular iMac, I think, is also a very good and in many ways professional desktop, and just one of the critical look, I used an iMac Pro for the last 3 years perfectly happily. The one thing that I can say about it, though, is that it is not quiet under load, and the iMac Pro is, and so that I think, like, for people out there who are wondering if they need an iMac Pro, like, if your needs can be solved by the regular iMac, which most needs could, mine still could, honestly. It's just faster and a little bit nicer to have the iMac Pro. But like, if your needs can fit in a regular iMac, that's still a perfectly good solution as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for joining me, guys. This has been fun to talk about nerdy Mac stuff. It's always a good time. So go check out the shows that Marco and Jason are on. And if you're listening to my voice right now and you are not a Relay FM member, it's okay. We still love you, but you should join. Go learn more at relay.fm/membership. Go find one of the six shows these two guys are on and support them directly. You can find show notes, relay.fm/fusionmembers/12. And until next month, adios.